This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's the...
billiard room.
Come on already. We call it the...
The Place to Be.
Yes, the Place to Be. The Place to Be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can. Ugh.
Time to play the game!
No, you left me satisfied and smiling.
That's what she said!
Why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be Podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola. Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
Japanese band Oral Vampire produced a song called The Repo Man and used footage.
Oral Vampire.
Oral. A-U-R-A-L.
What kind of show is this?
Sounds like some Twilight
porn in
Michael
Bolton's collection there. Osmond had to star in American Pie, of course. Bismarck.
No, was it? No, Bismarck was that?
Liz Mark.
No, who's the other guy I'm getting confused with?
Bismarck, yeah, he dressed as North Dakota.
There's only one place where the big boys play, and that is in my extra queen-size bed. Well, it just happens. What can you do?
Let's talk to the things.
I think we might kill. Shock wall.
Is that the Shockmaster's wall?
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. I was just curious. PTB Nation, let me know what you're
opening.
To do worse than Josh Richards. On the past, you to be your half. What? That's one to live by, or either that's one to die to. I try to just throw it at you. Determine your own adventure, Andre. Got to a station, here's my destination. She got off the bus, the conversation lingered in my head for hours. Took a shower, kinda sour, cause my favorite group ain't coming with it. But I'm with you, cause you're probably going through it anyway. But anyhow, went and died, went on out and bought it, cause I thought it would be jamming. But examine all the flaws, get
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to another great episode of the One Only Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Rosero, coming at you live here on this Monday evening inside the PTB Man Cave. And we are, of course, back inside the Vintage Vault for another great review. First one, Reagan by PIC. Mr. Scott Criscola. Scott, how are you tonight?
I am well, JR. Good evening to you, sir. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to episode 309 of the Place to Be Podcast on this Monday evening. Tempered weather here in the Northeast after kind of a wet and rainy weekend. How was your weekend, sir?
Pretty good. Although, I have this, like, big surprise, stuffed up allergy thing. I don't know if it's allergies or Juliana was sick, so I don't know if it's from her or what's going on. But big breaking news here on the podcast. I'm finally going to an ear, nose, and throat doctor tomorrow morning at 8:45. So I'm hoping
the sniffling and the bloody noses and the
sounding like this for 3 months is finally going
to
end.
And the sinus infection since October and everything else. So I'm hoping to finally get this shit all sorted out tomorrow. Tomorrow morning, so we'll see what goes on there. Hopefully, there'll be no more nasally podcasts.
Yes, no, good. Very good to know that, particularly as we're getting into the spring and things are getting, the flowers will bloom and the trees will be blooming late, so it won't be pretty. Speaking of blooming, JR, this evening we're in the Big Steel Box, and it's actually a very historic month for Vince. 12 years ago. In fact, 12 years ago today, as we're recording, JR, was a very memorable day
yes. In
WWE history. But let's open the door. See what's going on.
Hey, what is going on here?
I don't know, but our good friend, Steven Sutton, takes care of this place, and it's a fucking pigsty. Pick up the nacho chips. All right, I thought you were doing progress reports or something. Get out of the way. Anyway, tonight, inside the Vintage Vault and the Place to Be Podcast, one man, three jobs, judge, jury, and executioner.
As I lay me down to sleep, lay me down, I pray my soul is mine to keep. My soul can never step outside this bed, never into all the evil, all the evil.
The time has come.
Life.
The moment of truth is now.
Are you proud of what you've done?
The night of reckoning is here. Did you accomplish your goals? Did you fall short? The time has come.
Time has come.
The moment of truth is now.
Now.
Judgment Day is upon us.
What's that, like, Goldust music was starting there for a minute?
I know. Creepy, evil Goldust music. Tonight, inside the Vintage Vault and the Place to Be podcast, we bring you Judgment Day 2002. There's a lot of stories pertaining to this show, from copyrights to labels to the holy grail of DVDs to everything, and to the matches and then the aftermath of the matches. So, a lot to talk about. Before we get into the meat and potatoes, JR, do we want to talk about what happened today, 12 years ago? Or do we want to...
Yeah, okay, might as well. Yeah, and it was exactly... Which is funny, because we didn't plan this in any way, and I didn't even realize the coincidence until we were told today.
Yeah.
Which is pretty crazy. I think both Steven Sutton and Brad both brought it up.
Mm.
That, amazingly enough, we are reviewing the first ever WWE pay-per-view.
Yes.
We've been struggling to say
American.
Dirty F for all these years.
Yes.
American. And today is the anniversary, 12 years ago, of the company changing from Dirty F to WWE. So,
exactly. Yep.
Very fitting that we're basically reviewing this podcast today. The first pay-per-view under the new World Wrestling Entertainment banner. For years, the company had shared the name WWF with the Great Britain-based World Wildlife Fund. However, the Wildlife Fund sued the World Wrestling Federation in 2000, saying they had violated a 1994 agreement about using a logo during overseas tours. Many feel this was caused by the company's great arrogance during the height of the Attitude Era, as they flaunted their clout. So in losing the lawsuit, they had to stop using the WWF moniker and rename the company World Wrestling Entertainment. On the 5-6 Raw, they officially became WWE, and that's what we'll call them from now on. The company had been ordered to stop using the old Attitude logo on all of its properties and had to censor all past references to WWF, as they no longer owned the trademark to the initials. WWE was still permitted to use the original logo, which was used from 1984 to 1997, as well as the New Generation logo from 94 to 98, and could still say World Wrestling Federation or World Wrestling Federation Entertainment. The last pay-per-view to be under the WWF banner had been Insurrection on May 4th in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, since now, they have become a little bit more lax on that agreement and gone ahead and now allow them to say WWF. They can show the Attitude stuff unblemished and air it without the blurring that we had to deal with from 02 until about a year ago.
Yeah,
they came to an agreement. So they can't be called WWF anymore, but now they don't have to blur out or censor all the stuff they had to do over the last 10 years.
Yes. Two things from that, JR. Number one, I think legally it has something to do with the World Wildlife Fund was going to change their name. And when they filed with whoever, the patent office or whatever the fuck it is, I think Jerry McDevitt, who's a freaking vulture, swooped in and said, well, you're not using it anymore? Great. Can we use it again? And I think they worked out something where, all right, you can unblur your stuff.
Right.
I think that was part of it. Number two, and this is something I've heard from a couple of people that worked within WWE that don't longer work there. This is where kind of Shane got kind of in the outs with the family, because a lot of people say this was his fault. He's the one that used to be in charge. Again, this is just conjecture. That he was in charge of the overseas tours, and he's the one that kind of hung his nuts out and said, "Hey, fuck you," and got him in trouble.
Well,
and that's kind of where
that's definitely one for Kevin.
That's
so
a Kevin.
Yeah. That's true.
No, that's a Kevin question. We'll have to write that down. Again, I'm not saying that's, but a lot of people that were in the company for a long time said that Shane was the one in charge of the overseas tours, and he kind of fucked up and thought, "Well, fuck him. No one's going to say anything to us. We're WWF." And
I mean, a big miss on McDivitt and their part.
Yeah.
To whiff on this one.
Yeah.
And to lose the name and everything that they had to deal with. And, you know, part of them was probably excited to go to WWE in a way, because they always wanted to be the entertainment, and it called out what they were more probably at the time. But
right.
To have to go back and scrub everything, I thought was a big loss. Like, I didn't think rebranding, I mean, it was a weird thing, because I think for years no one called it WWE, but I think now it's fine.
Yeah.
I think the bigger issue was losing all the past stuff, especially at a time where they were just starting to really delve into their archive and do these DVDs and everything else. They had to go back and re-scrub everything. So
yeah, and from what I've heard from our friend, my friend Hank, you know Hank, who used to work there, the blurring was not a cheap expenditure. Not cheap in terms of like the, but it logging hours of doing it. Like it cost a lot of money to bring editors in and actually blur every logo. He said that was not a cheap. So a lot of people got pissed off.
And it was embarrassing. I mean, it really was.
The company had them.
Synonymous with it had to completely change their name.
Yeah.
Were you surprised at the time that they didn't go to WWFE?
I thought that would have been too clunky. WWFE. They seem very streamlined.
Well, that was the ticker symbol, if you remember.
Yes, that was the... Yes, that's the... Yeah, that's right. It's the stock market symbol. I don't know if that they would have... I know they were very big on Federation and the F and everything, but I don't know if... It would have been
Wrestling Federation Entertainment.
Yeah, it would have been very... I think it would have been very clunky. Yeah. I don't know if it would have fit in a marketing standpoint, but yeah, I know it's... Yeah, it's definitely the NASDAQ or the stock market logo. I don't know. I think just having the E would have been fine. And they got a good, They got a good marketing brand, but marketing plan out of it that we'll talk about because they played it a couple times on this show on the network today. I watched it on the network, as I'm sure you did. Mm-hmm. They played the I thought were a couple of hilarious vignettes telling to, well, might as well say it, get the F out.
Right. Yeah.
Of course, you know they always wanted to say that. So.
Yeah, I mean, it was a pretty good campaign. I'll give them that. They definitely saved it a bit with all. You know, they had the big Bush logo of Dirty F, and the lady burnt down the, cut down the F, and then burnt it down. And they had a bunch of different
out in the car.
That's right.
Roll down the window, roll it back up, and it goes from an F to an. I don't know why anybody would have a logo. This is funny. The logo is steamed on your window.
I know, right?
Weird.
It was good. As you mentioned, that made this DVD of this show very, very hard to find. Mm-hmm. And of course, because it was the first WWE show. So, although does that make sense? Why was this one hard to find? You would think Backlash would have been hard to find.
The poster, and it's on the Wikipedia page. The poster still says WWE.
Oh, okay.
The poster. Now, as everyone knows the story, I've been talking about it. It's about as like having Johnny Reckless on this show. I've been talking for eons about that being the holy grail of DVD collectors is finding Judgment Day 02.
Yeah.
This past October at a convention down in New Jersey, or no, it was in Queens. I'm sorry, it was in Queens. I got it finally. Guy had it for $50. $50, and which is much cheaper than I had seen. You and I used to look at it all the time. eBay, Amazon, fucking $250, $300.
Do you regret it now that it's you can press play on the network and there it is?
No, I don't. You would think so, but no, I'm not. It's nice to see it on my shelf and not a VHS tape anymore. But
it was cool to just put it on, though.
It was cool to just put it on. Yes, that is true. But it doesn't bug me much. But anyway, but I had to get the Koch, which is the Canadian printing of it. It's not the it's Koch, COCH, Coke, whatever it is, KOCH, whatever that is. It's like the, I think it's Canadian. It's not Silver Vision. Mm-hmm. It's the Canadian company because the American ones are gone. So it's not exactly the U.S. version, but it's still the DVD. But in any event. But the poster still has, because it says it right on the, this is promotional poster featuring The Undertaker, and we'll talk about why he's on the poster. The last to ever sport the WWF logo.
Right, so that's
so
definitely,
I think they were like in between.
Yeah, because they probably had printed everything, and they weren't going to reprint it. So
exactly.
That makes sense why that DVD was so hard to find for so long. But it was kind of cool to just put it on, and because I for years had the tape copy from when Jim would record off his box, and that by that point, 02 was like the dying days of his box, so the quality was not very good towards the end. So I've never actually had like a really good quality viewing of the show. So it's kind of cool to have it on and have it be really, really clear.
No, absolutely. No, I agree. It was nice to watch it today.
And I hadn't seen this one live because this was during our last week of college. And my wife and I went to Florida to visit my aunt for the week.
Mm-hmm.
And that was during the week of during the show. So I remember calling Adam for the results the next day.
Right.
I want to say I texted, but I don't think texting was really in vogue yet. So I think we talked on the phone. I think I called him.
Mm.
And he told me, and we'll mention this now too as well, is that the British Bulldog passed away on May 18th.
Yep, that's Saturday.
Yeah, yep. So I didn't know that, and obviously we didn't really have the internet. I mean, we did, but I didn't have it traveling with me.
Right.
So I couldn't just read these things like we can now. It's amazing that even just 12 years ago how much is different. But
oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So he told me that Bulldog died, and they gave me the results of the show. And I might be really sad about Bulldog dying. There was always a little part of me that wondered if he'd ever come back maybe one more time.
Mm.
So he died at the age of 39. I know we talked about it a couple months ago when we wrapped up his final show, but definitely one that bugged me. One of my favorites.
Of course.
Sad to see him go. There was also another passing away, Scott. Do you remember who? Legendary figure in the world of wrestling. Not WWF, but the world of wrestling.
May 2.
It was actually about a month earlier. Not a month earlier. I'm sorry. Like 3 weeks earlier. April
28th. 2002. Not a WWF guy. Thinking maybe a Japanese guy. Baba? Giant Baba?
No, it was Lou Thesz.
Oh, Lou Thesz. Okay.
Passed away at the age of 86.
Okay. Wow. The last time I remember seeing him on TV, did he come out when they had that pay-per-view in St. Louis? Remember when all the guys came out? Did he come out that time?
I don't know.
What the fuck was that? Bad Blood? No.
I don't think he was in the
Bad Blood.
Was it? Was he on that?
No, not Bad Blood. Yeah, Bad Blood was in St. Louis.
Yeah, that was the one that had Mushnick in the...
Yeah. Was he there too?
Vashon. No, I don't think Dez was there.
I'll have to look.
I don't remember.
Because remember one of those when they did those throwback things and...
Yeah, he showed up.
Yeah, I could have sworn it was that one. I don't know. Any event, Lou Thesz passed away 3 months earlier. Obviously, one of the greatest world champions in the history of the business. Wrote a legendary book called Hooker, which I never read. I like to find it, though. Hurt's really good. And then, as JR mentioned the day before the show, very sad passing of the British Bulldog. Because that was a death that was avoidable.
Story of Derek LaRue, Hooker.
Yes. Sugar tits Hooker.
All right. We mentioned the last WWF Supercard was Insurrection, April 5th, 02, from Wembley Arena in London. In a dark match, Mr. Perfect defeated Goldust. Mm-hmm. Rob Van Dam defeated Eddie Guerrero by disqualification. Trish Stratus and Jacqueline defeated Molly Holly and Jazz. X-Pac defeated Bradshaw. Booker T defeated Stevie Richards to become the new hardcore champion. Crash Holly defeated Booker. And then Booker defeated Crash. And then Stevie Richards defeated Booker to leave as hardcore champion. Steve Austin beat The Big Show. Triple H beat The Undertaker. And that was that pay-per-view. So that was the final major WWF pay-per-view event. It was a UK-only show, but that was the last one under the WWF name.
Yes, not the last British pay-per-view, but just the last one under...
right, the WWF.
There'd be one more the following year. But probably turn these off. I got the raw GM all over the place. Okay. And speaking of JR, I'm actually pretty excited that the British pay-per-views are on the network.
Yeah.
I was very excited. I watched Capital Carnage last week. That was actually pretty good. That was the one from December of 98. New weird card. And you'll notice almost every UK card from 98 to 2000, Tiger Ali Singh is on the card. Remember, they loved him over there.
Oh, yeah.
He'd win cheap, and oh, my God, they loved him.
And I know someone asked about if we're going to do those, but probably not in any kind of order because we've already missed some, but it might be something we throw in, you know, to watch someday and try to catch up. But it's nothing we're going to do as part of our chronological climb
here. No, because we've already passed one. There's only one left, so no, we're not going to. Well, again, we'll do maybe as a summer throwback thing or something. Who knows? Okay. May 19th, 2002. Live from the Gaylord Entertainment Center in Nashville, Tennessee. First time we've been in the Volunteer State, JR, in almost a little over 3 years. St. Valentine's Day Massacre in Memphis was the last one in Tennessee. The last one in Nashville. Oh, I think this was the first one in Nashville. I think it is.
All right, because Final Four is Chattanooga.
It's Chattanooga, and I think that was the first one in Tennessee. Yeah, so this is the third.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, so this is the third one in Tennessee, third different place. So we've never been in this building, JR. Mm-hmm. It is still up. Why don't you give us a little history of the GEC?
All right, the GEC, otherwise known as, you said, the Gaylord Entertainment Center, broke ground in January 20th, 1994, opened December 18th, 96, owned by Sports Authority of Nashville in Davidson County. Operator, Powers Management Company. Construction cost $144 million. Architect was Populous, in case you were curious.
Populous.
Holds 19,395 for basketball, 17,298 for hockey. Three tenants, the Nashville Predators, who still play there today. The Nashville Cats with a K, Scott. So I'm sure Michael Vincent has a compilation of their games. The AFL from 1997 to 01 and then 05 to 07. And they also host the SEC Men's Basketball Tournament. So...
Yes, they do occasionally, and I think Vanderbilt probably plays games there occasionally because that's where the campus is. So I'm sure they play not regularly, but I'm sure they play some big SEC opponents like Kentucky and that kind of stuff. I think they play there too. All right, your attendance pretty good, 14,500. Your buy rate not
is
bad.
It's actually known as the Bridgestone Arena. Just so you know.
Yes, it's now the Bridgestone Arena. Yes. Your buy rate, like I said, your attendance 14,500. Your buy rate not bad for a May show, 0.74. And your announcers, good old JR Jim Ross and Jerry the King Lawler. One match on heat, JR. What is it?
William Regal defeated, still a truck in here, D'Lo Brown on heat. And also we should call out there was an international version. Goldust defeated Crash Holly. Spike Dudley defeated the Big Boss Man. and D'Lo Brown defeated Just Incredible. And to finish off here, my Stephen Sutton notebook. Also need to call out our champions, as we did last
show. Yes, obviously it's been a month. Who are our champions, and do we get any transactions?
Yeah, we have one transaction, two debuts, and our champion. So, our undisputed champion is still Hollywood Hulk Hogan. Our intercontinental champion is still Eddie Guerrero. Our European champion is William Regal. He had defeated Spike Dudley on the May 6th, 02. I got to ask Steven to use the Americanized dates because his whole thing confuses me.
British thing. Day, then month.
And then being 02, I keep getting confused too with the year. It's like, I don't know, if it's May 2nd, 2013, I don't know what the hell's going on. Billy and Chuck are your tag team champions. Trish Stratus, still your women's champion. She had actually defeated Jazz in a tag team match on May 13th Raw, so she is our new women's champion.
In Toronto.
New Cruiserweight champions, the Hurricane, defeated Billy Kidman and Tajiri on May 2nd. And Stevie Richards is your hardcore champion, had defeated Trish Stratus on May 6th. I think it was part of that. No, it wasn't part of that tag match. I'm not sure how that happened. But so there are your champions. One transfer, Triple H, was signed as a free agent to SmackDown after he lost the world title back in Backlash. He became a free agent. As per the rules, went to SmackDown. TV debuts, a guy named Randy Orton debuted on April 23rd. And Deacon Batista, a guy we'll talk about shortly, debuted on May 9th. So that is all your notes there for this show. And we can go ahead and get into the card.
Okay. All right, let's dive in. Our opener is a rematch from the previous show from Backlash and also our first title match of the evening, the World Wrestling Federation Intercontinental title on the line. Your champion, Latino Heat, Eddie Guerrero, who won the belt at Backlash from the guy he's facing tonight enacting his rematch clause, and that is Rob Van Dam. And as we talked about, JR, fantastic match at Backlash. This one just as good.
Yeah, great choice for the opener.
Yeah, absolutely.
I like how Eddie immediately has his whole swagger back.
Oh, yeah.
As he's coming down.
He's feeling good.
RVD still getting huge pops. JR, I like to hear he pushed that it was a Battle of the Frog Splash, something they didn't really touch upon at Backlash, I thought.
No, they didn't. Yeah, they didn't. Yeah, and again, you and I talked about how their frog splashes are very different.
Right.
RVD gets height on his. He likes to jump up and then land. Eddie pretty much throws himself at you.
Yeah, his is like more like a power blast. One.
Yeah. He just drives at you, whereas RVD likes to get height. He bounces and lands
likes
on
to get
you.
High. RVD.
Well, they both did at some point.
RVD attacked the lower back, and he broke out his old split-legged moonsault. I feel like he wasn't doing that as often.
Yeah.
On TV, yeah. But he broke it out here. Eddie took over, slowed things down, but he was really hitting hard, but he was like kind of regaining his wind, which I like, so he would kind of slowly pick him apart. A lot more back and forth than pin attempts this time around, whereas if you remember last month, it was Eddie, once the second half of the match hit, Eddie just beat the shit out of him. Here, we get a lot more back and forth. Eddie misses a frog splash, and I like that touch too, because it was clear that RVD wasn't hurt enough yet, that Eddie went for it too soon. RVD tried the same, and Eddie moved, so back and forth there, they both miss. Lots of racist Mexican commentary and jokes from both JR and King, I noticed, about Eddie.
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
Really playing that up. I thought this match was choppier than last month. Eddie steals a win and cheats. It was a fun match, a good opener, but I thought it was a notch below Backlash.
Yeah, I think the commentary doesn't help matters. I wasn't crazy about like I said, JR and King were a little rough in this one, but a little more deliberate. I think the one at Backlash had a little more energy to it. I think both of them in the rematch, I think kind of changed their pace a little bit. It was a little slower. So I wouldn't say it was terrible, obviously, but I think the story they told was a little different than at Backlash, and I think we were a little taken aback by it.
Right, because Backlash was so unique. I mean, it's like Eddie beat the piss out of him, pinned him, which I liked. Here, I just felt like they didn't get as in sync. Like I thought the end part was a little choppier this time around. It was still really good. I just had really high hopes coming into this one after last month.
Yeah, no, I did too. But it's still a good match, and Eddie wins, retains the title with his usual tomfoolery as he gets a roll up and then hooks his feet, which he'll do a lot over the next 4 years in various ways. So Eddie Guerrero retains the World Wrestling Entertainment. I think I said Federation before. I knew it at least once. The WWE Intercontinental title. I might just ditch that and go to the belts. So Eddie Guerrero retains the Intercontinental Championship. Not my fault. It's none of ours. You only have one man to blame. Basil DeVito. No, I don't know. So Eddie retains the title and moves on. A little over 10 minutes. Good show. Were you surprised? I know you and I have been talking about this constantly since pretty much since No Mercy 01. surprised at another loss by RVD here, or is it?
With the help of my snarky cat lawyer, Meowsy McDermott, you've got to be kidding me.
That's who Vince hired. Yeah, well, again, though, like I said, a backlash. I'm kind of okay with it now because he's already settled into this role. It's not, I mean, they whiffed on it already, so I'm fine with him being in a really good feud with Eddie back and forth, and okay. I thought Eddie beating him was fine. My mindset has changed because the cat's already out of the bag.
That was terrible.
Well, actually, I wasn't even thinking that. It was just...
No, I was thinking about the fact that you said Mousy McDermott, so cat was out of the bag.
I know. I didn't even realize I put that together.
But... All right. So Eddie wins.
The witch
right,
is out of the
up...
bottle. Is that my point?
Yes. All right. Next up, we have our second title match of the evening. The women's championship is on the line. Your champion, as we mentioned, Trish Stratus, who won the title in her hometown of Toronto on May 13th. Only
kind of a makeup from her losing at Mania.
I guess. I'm surprised, JR, here that they were back in Toronto so soon. I was about to say, last night, for instance, in case anyone didn't know, I was at Extreme Rules last night. The next show at IZOD is a house show at the end of September. Wow. It's like so far away. I guess it really isn't 5 months. But still, though, it's back then they seemed to have gone back quicker. They seemed to have had, I don't know, just seems different that now I feel like they go to places less often. But anyway, so she wins it in Toronto and takes on Stacy. This was a weird feud. Because there's a lot of outside forces. Tell us a little bit about JR, where so many people are involved in what would be a simple women's match.
All right, let's mention Stacy first. She was now Vince McMahon's personal assistant. She gave him a dance in the ring on the 411 SmackDown. Mm-hmm. And she had D-Von and this guy Deacon Batista in her corner because they're all part of McMahon's entourage. As we mentioned, the Dudley Boys had been split up in the brand extension. D-Von was sent to SmackDown. Bubba Ray remained on Raw. D-Von switched his persona under the guise of a reverend that was constantly looking for donations for his church. Of course, the underlying theme was that he was using the funds for personal gain, and it became Mr. McMahon's personal spiritual guide. And this was all playing off of, remember, you used to always do the testify and the kind of the preachy stuff. After some attempts at nabbing his money, D-Von decided to bring in some muscle to protect the money box. On the 5-9 SmackDown, Deacon Batista debuted. The Deacon was portrayed by Dave Bautista, a monster wrestler that had been cutting his teeth in Ohio Valley Wrestling as Leviathan. He had won the OVW heavyweight title but dropped it to the prototype before being called up as D-Von's right-hand man. Scott, is Anthony Armento your Deacon Bautista with the Knights of Columbus?
He is.
Chain around his neck and protects the money box?
That's right, yes. He is. Except the difference is Bautista shaved his head close. Armento doesn't have that excuse.
Armento looks like Leviathan, though.
Yeah.
By the way, can we tell everyone my suggestion for your sign last night?
Yes, go ahead. Yeah,
it would be a sign that you hold over our mental and an arrow pointing down that says "Hair was here." Let me call it, that's a good one. Right? Andy popped big time at Bonehead when I told him.
Oh god, that was funny. Oh Jesus, that was hilarious.
Armento. So the is he coming to the Rotella Memorial Day Bash?
I don't know. Maybe. We're not staying. We're not going to stay overly long either. But we are going to stop by because we want to see Owen. And glad you're coming. I don't know if he was going to. You know what? Yeah, he probably is because he's coming with us to the game later on in the day. So yes, he will be there.
Okay, that's good.
He will be there, like and he'll be holding the box. He'll be holding the box, and Dr. G will be wearing the he'll be wearing the D-Von outfit. So because that's pretty much
out the box.
In the box.
So you may also wonder why the Dullies are even involved in this contest. We have Bubba.
Right, exactly.
Bubba's out there with Trish, and D-Von's with Stacy. The night after Mania, the Dudleys were involved in a tag title match against Billy and Chuck. Stacy tried to help, her interference backfired, the Dudleys lost. Bubba powerbombed her through a table, and the logic is D-Von, freshly turned heel, wanted to assist Stacy in getting her revenge. And so that is why they're both out here in this match. Now, D-Von had assaulted Bubba before the show and had vowed to Vince that Bubba would not show up. So it would be D-Von and Batista in Stacy's corner, and Bubba would not be there, but of course he did show up. And I like now that they were starting to develop Trish's kind of character as well. She's not just improved in the ring, it's also kind of setting her up as a smart, witty female, I thought, on the roster, not just looks and her improved talent.
Right. Yeah, no, definitely. She, I think it was the feud with Jazz that I think really did that for her. I mean, Jazz is an exceptional talent. I mean, Stacy is not Jazz, that's for sure, but in a lot of ways. But I think they did you sneeze?
I coughed.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
I'm dying here. It's always at night. Like it really sets in like around this time. So it's
well, now you're getting to the time of year where your neighbor mows the fucking lawn at 4 o'clock in the morning. So
and I was off today. We did a lot of stuff out in the yard, so I'm just, it's all, I think, catching up now.
Bunched up in your, well, at least you're getting it taken care of. You know, I think the Jazz feud really helped her in a lot of ways in that aspect, being really over as a babyface and being more than just the hot chick with the belt. Mm-hmm. I think she definitely advanced her character here. And she's dealing with some good characters, some good personalities. Trish, I should say Stacy.
Yeah.
Her first real match. I can't remember if she's had a singles match at all since.
Well, she had the bra and panty stuff.
Yeah. So this is like her first like actual match. And the Dudleys needed to be established. I mean, they're at the time the foundation team in WWE.
Right. And it's funny because, and they were really pushing Bubba. They were kind of giving him almost like a modern day Dusty Rhodes kind of thing. He was doing the dancing and the flip flop and fly elbow. But I really enjoyed D-Von in this role. I thought it was a kind of a unique character we hadn't seen before, and I liked that Vince was building this weird little stable, and he had his personal minister, and D-Von was collecting all the money, and he was good in the role. He was a good talker, and I liked it. I kind of wish it had a longer shelf life than it does.
Yeah, I got to tell you something, though. I loved the Reverend D-Von character. Something about it I liked. I don't know why. There's something about it I liked. And I immediately... And I'm not just saying this because of what would end up be happening, although, boy, what a 180 from what I watched live last night. But I knew the minute I looked at Batista, Deacon Batista, I said, this guy's not going to keep this outfit for long.
No,
There's something in the works for him. This guy is right up Vince's alley, big jacked up dude, a lot of tats, you know, short hair and that look, and he was putting over big power moves. You knew this was a guy who was just kind of biding his time. And Vince was going to use him for something stronger down the line. So,
and speaking of, he tries to assist here a couple times. That was okay, brawling diva stuff. Trish has clearly gotten smoother, and I think it shows in matches like this with a weaker opponent where she all of a sudden becomes a veteran. And I thought she was pretty smooth here. She ends up escaping, gets the win, escapes. Bubba chucks Batista from the ring, but D-Von knocks him down. Bubba gets put through a table. A long brawl. You almost get like two matches in a way. You get the women's match, you get Bubba versus D-Von and Batista with them coming out on top. I thought it was a good way to kind of solidify the Batista-D-Von unit, and Bubba can take the loss. And him and Trish had kind of been working as a team on Raw. So a fine match, really centered more around the Dudley stuff than the women's stuff.
Mm. Yeah, because I don't think anybody expected much out of it. I mean, the match was not even 3 minutes, and Trish retains the women's title. So nothing much match-wise. I think a lot of it was just to establish everybody else, so... Okay, well, there we go. Next up, we have a segment that I thought was a little forced. I thought this whole feud was forced. We'll get more into it in a minute because that match is coming up in a couple seconds. Mm-hmm. Vince McMahon, SmackDown owner, walks into the backstage to talk to Ric Flair, Raw owner.
Like we saw last month.
Yeah, and now all of a sudden Flair is like, you know, Vince, you're right. About that no good Steve Austin. He's bad for the show, and I'm going to take him down. And I hated it. I hated everything about this. I really did. And we'll get more into it.
Well, it's like
alluded to it at Backlash, but I really hate it now.
Well, it's like they realized they couldn't book a face GM when he's the only person on the show or a face owner, especially on a show with Austin. So they immediately had to turn Flair evil. He gives Vince credit for being right about Austin along. Yeah. And he vows, but he gets a little dig out of Vince saying he vows to take Austin down, something Vince couldn't do.
Vince couldn't do, yeah. I saw. Yeah,
and
yeah,
neither man still trusts the other. They kind of give sly faces when they're hugging. Would you rather have had just Vince down Raw and feud with Austin and Flair go to SmackDown as a face, or did you like that they at least put Vince on SmackDown to carry the brand?
No, I definitely liked Vince on SmackDown. I just thought doing this was stupid. But obviously, they had already had enough star power on SmackDown. So adding another guy of that stature to Smith, because technically Rock was on SmackDown, even though he wasn't around.
Right, he's not even there.
He's not even there.
They got Triple H now.
Triple H is technically now on SmackDown. We know why. We're not surprising because, as we said at Backlash, whoever lost the title match at Backlash was going to be a SmackDown guy because it was, you know, those two guys. And obviously, so you have Triple H, you have Jericho, you have pretty much you have Kurt and Edge. So really, what was Austin going to add to SmackDown except get in the way of those guys? Vince, I mean, this is where the draft residuals come in. What was Austin going to do on SmackDown? It just says get in those guys' way. You know what I mean? So sadly, in a lot of ways, the draft kind of painted themselves in a corner because it was so shitty. And
well,
there was
I don't
really
think the draft
was
the problem. I think Austin's the problem. We talked about this.
Well, that's true too, and we'll get into that because I realized how much I did not like the match, but we'll get to that later.
Well, it's weird. I actually don't mind the match, but the idea of it. But we'll get to it, as you said.
We'll get to it in a minute.
Let's get to our next match here.
Next match, we have a tag that's a little unusual, but that's okay. We have the Hardy Boys, who are now back together, I guess. Mm-hmm. Or maybe not. I mean, I know they're together for this match and this storyline, but have they really been considered together again?
Yeah, they have. Because remember, at Mania, they were in the tag title match.
Yeah, so they're pretty much... They realize yeah. those... Their singles pushes can wait. And they're taking on the Beast, although he's just called the next big thing now, and that is Brock Lesnar and his partner, Paul Heyman, who's actually going to wrestle. God, help us. First off, I'm trying to remember when Brock finally gets his very well-known entrance theme, because the one they used here, did you remember
it
today?
Yeah,
it's fucking terrible.
Yeah, it was not good.
Worst Jim Johnston hack job ever, and he rarely blows theme songs.
And Brock was handed his first loss via disqualification. On May 13th, he lost to both Hardys in a handicap match, mm-hmm. and then Paul Heyman issued a tag team challenge here. So playing off their match from Backlash and the panties and everything else. Mm-hmm. If you remember, Lita is not here. She's home rehabbing, having broken her neck when they were filming the Dark Angel show. Yep. But Brock still torturing the Hardys. Good concept. This is pretty classic booking. I thought JR was awesome in this match. He had some really good lines on Heyman. Three of my favorites. Human urinal, which is a good one. You don't hear
yes, human
of.
Urinal. It's a sewer of life or cesspool of life or something. He was just destroying Heyman.
Living, breathing septic tank. I like that.
That's right. Living, breathing septic tank. That's
and then
right.
He calls him a cow on ice when he's running.
Yes.
Yeah, so, human urinal is my favorite, though.
Human urinal, yeah. I like
so
that.
So Brock dominates after the Hardys try to strike first. They get some daylight, and Heyman freaks out. Hardys get more offense in. I thought this was really the first sustained shots in on Brock, where he was staggered a bit. Heyman finally gets dragged in and gets beat on, but Brock makes a save. Brock wipes out the Hardys and tags Paul in and lets him get the pin. I like this as a mini squash again, and Heyman's celebration was good. And Heyman's really a great pair with Brock. I mean, they've really made a good tandem from day one. And I like this feud overall to establish Brock. I thought it was a good first 2 months for him to be involved with the Hardys.
Yeah, well, they're two good bumpers. They're two guys you could chuck around, and they look good doing it. So nothing earth-shattering here. You could just tell that it's kind of a holding pattern for him while the main event was kind of matriculating through their older guys. Another guy that you knew was on the horizon and was ready to explode. Again, as for the Hardys, you know, they do their best and bumped around and did their thing. So nothing crazy here. Just another filler match to make Brock look like a stud. He actually took shots, actually fell to the ground a few times, took some moves. That was kind of cool to see him a little. He's not like an Andre where like, oh my God, he's not hitting the ground. At least they made it like, all right, he's a monster, but you know, you hit him in the right place and he'll fall.
Right.
So that was good there too, that he was a little mortal. But like Paul leaning, you know, squirming on the ropes and pulling like the road dog at the Rumble 2000 where he's hiding and everything. That was kind of cool. So otherwise, nothing earth shattering there. This begins what might be, JR, one of the best lighthearted storylines that pretty much lasts throughout 2000. Yes, and it has to do with him. Probably one of the more lighthearted storylines that lasts throughout 02 and even into early 03. Booker T is backstage, and he is now a member of the New World Order. Which
so, yeah, and Flair had kind of taken over the NWO when he turned heel, and the NWO was just dying on the vine very quickly. So Hall had been fired, Hogan had turned, Nash is hurt, and so now it's Booker and another guy we'll get to in a minute, and X-Pac. With Flair as like the leader, that it was just stupid that they even kept this going.
No, it's so terrible.
So a little eye candy comes by. Booker hits on her and gets a hotel key. I liked this usage of Booker. I thought it was good to reinvigorate him a bit because this is what he was good at. You know, the kind of the cheesy kind of, you know, smarmy, pandering heel sleaze guy. Like I liked him in this kind of hitting on the chick and getting the hotel room key and getting all excited about it.
Yeah, no, it was funny. Hands her hotel key, and this continues on later on in the show, but it is quite hilarious. Mm-hmm. So, all right, Let's get into the match that's pertaining to this ridiculous storyline, and that is Stone Cold Steve Austin is in a handicap.
For so long, you and me been finding each other for so long, and the feeling that
I think we need a Jason Greenhouse Photoshop of this Andy Gibb Flowing Rivers CD cover here that I'm looking at that has like Flair and you in it somehow.
It was one of those like awesome 70s swooshing colors and solid gold. And,
says, this is an easy one. This is a layup for Greenhouse.
Okay, cool. All right. So Rich, I was called it by his real name, Richard Flyer. No, Ric Flair. And the other new member of the NWO, which is just getting ridiculous. Go ahead and dive into this.
So after a few weeks of anarchy, Ric Flair realized he would never be able to control Steve Austin, so to prevent him from destroying his show, Flair decided to take Austin out. On the April 22nd Raw, Ric Flair made a match between Scott Hall and X-Pac and Austin and Big Show. Big Show turned on Austin at the end of the match in the worst-kept secret of all time and officially joined the NWO. Show gone to blame Austin, which I actually like this part of it. He blamed Austin for his low position on the card and being completely left off WrestleMania. Finally, on the May 6th Raw, Flair teamed with Austin and Bradshaw to take on Hall, X-Pac, and Show. And again, in a most obvious turn, Flair bashed Austin with a chair and officially joined the NWO to solidify his heel turn. Flair announced this match and then locked Austin in the figure four. The following week, Flair said it was a new era for the NWO, fired Scott Hall, and said a new member would debut that night. Flair then granted himself an undisputed title match. And this one I liked too. I remember watching this Raw. He wrestled Hollywood Hogan for the first time on national WWE television, and Hogan won thanks to Austin's interference. At the end of the show, Flair had Austin face the newest member of the NWO, Booker T. Austin won the match, but the NWO took him out to stand tall to close the show. I remember being really excited for that Flair-Hogan match, actually, because we had never seen that on WWF TV. It was kind of cool.
Yeah, it was very cool. I mean, not counting, obviously, you know, the 50 billion house show matches in 91, but in this instance, yeah, like a major high-profile match. I got to tell you, on a side note, I know you saw the Lumpy Silverback this weekend and his beautiful son, who, of course, has to get his father's dietary habits. In any event, I'd hear that story today. But he was telling you that he's been watching all the WWF shows since he got the network. And he got the network since I gave him my login. The other day, he's watching that show. And of all the guys, he's the weird. This is why he is the weirdest wrestling fan I've ever met in my life. For a guy who likes shit like Mantar and Duke the Dumpster, he literally turns to me with a straight face and goes, "God, I can't stand Art Donovan." I'm like, what is wrong with you? Well, he's a loser, Art. And he's like, what is Gorilla calling him? He can't even get his name right. I'm like, you're not even getting this, are you? God,
terrible. I can't believe the whole thing. They're killing each other.
Now, I wanted to kill him. God, what a boob. For all the crap that guy likes, he couldn't even... one thing that was legitimately hilarious, and it annoyed him. Sorry, I said it.
Is the partner getting any air at all? I can't even hear you. I'm sorry.
Yeah, if I'm not going to say, I can't hear you, Matt, I'm sorry. I'm going to do that to him from now on. All right, in any event.
Randy, is this one of the wrestlers? He's one of the best. He looks like...
Okay, I don't think we've played these in a while. Nice to pull these out. All right. Okay.
Is that what I said?
Yes. But again, it's so annoying. All the shit he likes, and the one thing that's actually funny, he doesn't find funny.
Yeah, he's a piece of work.
He is a piece of work.
Here we are. Face to face. A couple of
silver spoons. It's not
good. No.
Yeah, it's terrible. I would rather see Ricky Schroeder here. The one line that I did like during that promo when he mentioned about being low in the position, he goes, "Last, you know, WrestleMania, I was eating food like some fat guy kissing your scummy kids." It was like, this is fucking hilarious.
I liked the reasoning because, you know, the year Austin was out, he main evented Mania. Austin comes back and he's pushed down the card. So I thought that part actually, of all this mess, that made the most sense. But as we mentioned too, and we'll cover this next week, but this is Steve Austin's last pay-per-view match till February of 2003.
Yes.
So he's had quite a run.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not going to eulogize him or anything because he'll be on quite a bit. So.
No, he'll be on. Yeah, he'll be on. We'll tell you why next week.
Yeah.
Another thing just reminded me when we were talking about Big Show. Another repercussion of the brand change, mm-hmm. WWF New York is no longer.
Right.
That's what it was, at Backlash. It is now simply called The World.
I thought it wasn't WWE New York for a while.
Maybe in between.
It was, and then it went to The World.
Well, it was The World here. So if it was WWE New York, it wasn't very long. It wasn't very long. Because April 25th, Backlash, it was WWF New York.
Did they call it The World on this?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so maybe it never was then.
Yeah. No, it was The World when they went to the show. Yeah, when it went to it at the beginning. I made, actually, for some reason, knowing we were going to talk about it tonight, I made a point to look and see, and it definitely was The World by that point. So. And this is when actually the food started to get better and it was cooler to hang out there. They must have fired the other chef, because the two times I went after it became The World, the food actually wasn't too bad. The first few times it was terrible. But in any event, that's how it changed. So the match was okay.
I liked the match.
I thought it was kind of slow.
Yeah. I don't know. I was annoyed by going back to the authority thing, but I thought, like, as a snapshot, in a capsule, I thought this was actually okay. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about Big Show again for a minute. I mean, another stab at saving him.
Yep.
Heel again. Actually has good reasoning.
Mm-hmm.
Are you all right? We're giving this another go here?
Yeah. As a heel? Yeah, I do. I do. At least they gave good reason. I think the reasoning, JR, makes it legitimate, in my opinion.
Right.
I think that's what works.
And I think it's better than double trouble shit on a stick.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, I had no problem with it. The problem I have with it is he's wearing NWO stuff, which is just putrid.
Although, he was an NWO guy, so I guess at least he makes sense.
But having Flair in the NWO is literally the stupidest thing ever.
No, that was dumb. Like, why even keep the NWO name going? Why not just have Flair start
a new millionaires club or whatever, the Magnificent Five or whatever the fuck they want to call it. Other shit, but I don't know. It was not good. It was not good. The match is not... It's not that bad. All right. It's not that bad. Maybe, again, I'm on the fact that it was just the shits watching the feud. The match isn't terrible. In ring, see, the sad thing is, in ring, Austin's actually still really good. I mean, he's still banging it out.
Yeah.
I feel he's not as flexible as he was in the awesome 0-1 run, but he still was getting his shots in. And I agree with you, though. I feel like there was some more, like, comedy parlor trick stuff.
No, to even circle back too, I thought Flair was great in the heel role. Like, I actually thought he was really good. It's just the angle is the same thing.
Right.
My beef isn't with turning Flair heel, because I think he's right back to being the awesome heel Ric Flair, without a doubt. And he put over Big Show hard. In a way, this is also like a dream feud, Austin and Flair. So I thought seeing it here was kind of cool. Charles Robinson's the ref, doesn't play too much into it. Austin fights them both off early. The crowd's really jacked up for this one. Austin puts the figure four on both, and like you said, a lot of fun early with Austin kind of doing like the ninja kind of thing, like dodging one and hitting the other and fighting them both off. Austin wants to use chairs. Charles Robinson doesn't let him. More gags. Austin grabs a beer and then beats up Flair with it, and Robinson takes that too. Austin dominates Flair. Big Show slows things down. I love Flair gave Austin an awesome low blow right in front of Robinson. Good booking with Flair working fast spots and Austin coming back, and the Big Show would come in and regain control and then leave. Ric Flair and Big Show worked the leg. Flair doles out orders, which I thought was good too, to really kind of play up that Big Show was under his control. Austin would survive the figure four and Big Show interference to come back. X-Pac comes out. I liked Big Show staying on his feet after the stunner, and then X-Pac accidentally knocks him down. Austin hits the stunner on X-Pac and Flair and gets the win. I thought there were a lot of good spots here. I liked it.
Yeah, I think it was Austin did a good job of balancing the match on his end. The crowd was hot for it. Nobody knew what was going on in the back, so they were just assuming Austin was in a typical feud. Did you have it feeling weird? Austin has never been in, I don't want to say useless feuds, but never in feuds that really are the genesis of the show. And he was like legitimate mid-card now. Did it seem weird to you? It
Austin?
Felt weird to me that, like, yes, this is a great match. It's a good match, and I like, and the feud is shaky, but Flair's a heel is cool, and the match wasn't bad. But I just feel like, wow, this is weird. Like, Austin's in, like, all right, he's in the, think about it. After he
I
lost
liked it, though. I mean, I kind of liked so much about this other than just going back to Austin versus the Authority. That was my only issue. I like him in the mid-card fighting other guys. I like him, kind of doing some goofy stuff, and this is a really good match with Flair. It's kind of a dream match. And his interaction with Flair is pretty good. It, just going back to the well with the authority and Austin being the badass thing is what was bugging me with it.
Mm.
And the NWO. That was stupid, too. But, I thought, I don't know. I liked Austin feuding all the guy. I don't know. I don't know what it is that overarching that's bugging me, but I like all the pieces of it. Like, he's fighting some new guys, and Big Show's actually being used pretty well, where Flair's just giving him orders, and you know, I think it was Scott Keith who had the line in his review. It's always kind of stuck with me in this match, where he said all of Big Show's matches should include Ric Flair working while he stands on the apron. Like, that was always was my favorite Keith lines. And it was true, because this is a very good Big Show match, and since Flair does most of it. And I thought Big Show played his role well. Came in when he needed to, beat down Austin, and then left, and then Flair would do all the work.
Yep, I agree. I did, now that I think about it, the match actually wasn't too bad. I think I'm being again clouded by the fact that the storyline is the real mess. But Austin wins. I don't know where you go with it. Well, we don't know where we go with it at this moment, but we will tell you next week when we reopen the box. Because things aren't great backstage anyway, but they're going to get a whole lot worse with Austin. So, all right. Good match. Next up, another great rematch from...
Actually, I wanted to call something out. So we go up top to Michael Cole and Taz.
Oh, yeah.
Previewing this match. I feel like they're still getting hosed in this deal. Like, at least they're on the show now, but they're still kind of getting fucked with this whole thing because they're not getting to commentate any matches. You have King and Ross calling all the SmackDown matches, which makes no sense because they haven't been, you know, in theory, watching or at least calling all the action. By our next show, they'd kind of have a bit of it figured out, but it would take a little bit before they do the right thing. But at least they're here and involved, but I feel like they've kind of gotten screwed in all this.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, they know what's going on. Because, you know, they do the show. And pretty much during the SmackDown matches, it's Lawler doing cheesy jokes and I don't know. It did seem kind of like, and they're so off in the distance.
Yeah.
Like they couldn't be like backstage or they couldn't be, you know, at the bottom of the ramp interviewing. No, they're like way up in the cat. They might as well have done it from the world. You know, it's like, hey, we're the SmackDown guys all the way here in New York. You know, it was pretty weak. It sucks. It was pretty weak though. Okay. Next up, we have another rematch, like Eddie and RVD, a rematch from Backlash. And it is, it's about more than just pride now. It's a lot more involved, but it's about good looks.
Mm-hmm.
And Edge, we're talking about Edge, of course, going from having a shampoo commercial match at WrestleMania to wondering if he's going to wash any hair at all anymore. You know, when they put the two pictures up and then JR and King were talking about and then they did the graphics and took their hair off, immediately you thought to yourself, Kurt needs to lose this match because Edge would just look really weird without hair. He had like the smaller head.
Yeah.
He would have looked awful. It almost fit that Kurt was one that needed to have his head shaved. Talk a little about the back. Talk about our backstory because there was something before this. And again, hilarity with these two in their build.
Well, Angle decided to debut a new shirt, but Edge was able to tamper with it before the unveiling. When Kurt pulled off the sheet off the easel, it was revealed that the shirt said, "You suck!" Thus, the chant that would follow Angle for the rest of his career was now born. Edge would hammer it home leading up to the show. They would add this hair stipulation, and we get the standard photoshopped pictures of both guys, as you mentioned. But
did you get the "You suck" shirt?
I did not. Did you like the haircut stipulation?
I think the haircut stipulation was great. Absolutely. It was tremendous. You need to put something into this match if there were no, you know, there's no belts or anything. So you needed to add something to it. I think these guys' chemistry was tremendous. Boy, what an idea to put these two together in a program. Absolutely. I think it was tremendous. Then they put out the other shirt. Was that an actual shirt that they did release, the one that had all those words on it? Remember he did another, I think the following week he did another unveiling, and it was the actual shirt and it had all those, I have gold, do you? Like all those, was that an actual shirt?
I don't remember, honestly.
I don't remember them releasing that shirt. It had a whole bunch of, it's true, I have gold, do you, or whatever. It's, I don't know, it had like a lot more. It was a much more busy shirt than the you suck, which would have been nice, but. Now, if it said I suck, then that would have been even better. I think that would have been funnier if they had put I suck instead of you suck. It would have actually made more sense. In any event, here we go. It is Edge and Kurt Angle, loser loses hair. And wow. I am changing my opinion of this match from when I remember watching and we did our original written review on Bigelow34.ProWords.com. I liked it, but I didn't love it. Then I watched it again today, and I loved it. I think it was better than Backlash. And Backlash was great. But giving these guys another match to kind of work themselves in, we talked about JR at Backlash, how Edge continuing his evolution as a wrestler, as a singles wrestler, and kind of enveloping everybody else's styles. Kurt did a good job of kind of helping him along. Not that he needed a lot of it at Backlash, but here I felt Edge was very comfortable, worked with Kurt flawlessly, and put on a tremendous match.
Well, maybe we should see what our previewing extraordinaire has to say.
You're a mean one, Mr. Grinch.
This match resulted in a more positive response from me than Backlash, but still had tendencies I disliked to prevent me from calling a classic. Blah, 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 Campbell, in your stupid previewing. Again, 3.5 stars. I think a little short on that one. But we all know, Chad Campbell can never be happy watching a wrestling match. But I actually agree with him a little bit more than you on this one. So a lot of slugging back and forth early on. Both were put over as young future stars, and lots of hair talk on the commentary. Angle tied in the ropes, Edge with a spear, Kurt slips free, and a belly-to-belly over the top rope was one of my favorite sequences. I thought that was nasty. Angle grounded Edge and grinded him down with a chin lock, another long rest hold. I thought this one had a slower pace than a Backlash. Edge comes back with some high-risk moves. Edge shows that he learned. He blocks the top rope belly to belly, but then Angle starts to go into suplexes, and Edge starts countering them and hitting roll-ups instead, which I thought Edge, again, showing that he learns. And then, it wasn't crazy when they went back to the well and Kurt hits the belly to belly. I actually would have preferred that he never hit it, because I like that Edge learned from it, and then Kurt never gets it off. So Kurt hitting it kind of was like, oh, well, kind of negated that whole story of did you agree with that? Like, with we had Edge learning all the tendencies, and then he gets it anyway.
Yeah. I thought maybe they could have gone somewhere else. Maybe Kurt fighting off the, or Edge
anything,
fighting off
just,
the ankle lock. Yeah.
But they could have done anything, though, with, I just didn't like the him. I didn't think they needed Kurt to hit the belly to belly after Edge already blocked it. Like, I feel like he learned and they didn't have to go back to it. But anyway. So Kurt goes for a chair. Edge hits two spears. We get a good near fall. Probably the hottest point of the match so far. Edge survives a spear and an Angle slam, and to me that was a star-making moment for him when he kicked out of that. Edge also works out of the ankle lock and gets to roll up to a huge pop. I thought the finish was really good, but again, kind of like RVD and Eddie, I thought this match was a lot choppier than Backlash. I liked the initial matches of this and of RVD Eddie better than the rematches here. Kurt would run away and Edge chased after him to try and track him down to cut his hair. But so did you like this one better than Backlash?
A little better. Yeah, because I think simply Edge got more comfortable. I think at Backlash, as great as it was, Edge was kind of letting Kurt dictate and kind of let the story tell. Here, I feel like it was a little more 50-50. Maybe that's why you got that weird spot. Maybe it wasn't. Maybe they tried something and it didn't work because they were working more together than in, I think at Backlash, I think Kurt was more of the predominant storyteller. I think in this match, I think they were going 50-50, and maybe they tried something and it didn't work. Maybe that's why you caught it. But still, I just think that the 50-50 balance in the storytelling and Edge feeling much more comfortable, I think, made this a better, better match. Not greatly better.
I mean, I'll give you this. I think that maybe the story in this one is better. I just thought the match itself at Backlash was a little bit better. Like the actual progression of the match, the not being as choppy, but a little bit more smooth, the near falls. I thought this one had the better finish and the better story throughout, and that was really mainly Edge's growth.
Right.
But as far as actual matches, I think I preferred Backlash.
Mm. Okay. I prefer this one slightly more.
So one point that the Chatty the Stole Christmas brings up here in his thing is, did you actually feel like this is, you know, because it is renowned as kind of a great feud. He thinks it's better just as a snapshot of Edge's rise as a main eventer. Did you see it more like that, or did you see it as being more of a the great feud that everyone says it is?
I think it's a great feud. I think it's just a great feud. I wasn't looking at main event statuses. Kurt obviously can be in it whenever he wants to. Edge, maybe not quite yet. I just like the feud. I thought the stuff they did on Raw was funny with the pictures and the I suck and, you know, my testicles are small or whatever he wrote in the back of the pictures. All of their interactions on Raw leading up to both matches, Backlash and Judgment Day, were indicative of the fact that their strengths are they have good personalities. They're funny guys. So I didn't look too far ahead, in my opinion, at the two of them. I just liked the feud. Mm. I thought it was written well. I thought it was put together very well, and they were funny. They were just funny. And then they wrestled, and they wrestled a great match. I didn't look too far ahead into, oh, is this pushing Edge to it? Nah, not yet. Not yet. Something happens to Edge in the summer that I think legitimizes him finally. And we'll get to that when we get closer to Vengeance. So there you go. So Edge wins, but Kurt chases him around, and eventually Kurt gets caught.
We'll get
to that later. Yeah. So anyway, Kurt tries to like duck it, and he runs off, and Edge chases him, and we'll continue their travails later. But Edge wins the match, so logistically, Kurt is the one that has to lose his hair, but he runs away before anybody catches him. So more on that later. All right. Before we go to break, let's mention this one last skit. We will continue on with newly minted NWO member Booker T.
Yes.
In the hotel, getting lucky with this fine little lady. She asked him to turn down the lights, and then we get a little, baby, I love the way you talk today. And, you know,
and she's
Barry
like,
White action.
Read my autobiography, Hooker.
Yes. fuck you, Daddy. I'm with Booker T. Booker the Hooker. And then all of a sudden, we hear a strange voice.
Well, the lights go out.
Yes, the lights go out.
And they come back on. You hear the voice, they come back on.
And it is and
he's in the bed.
He's in the bed.
And it was his opportunity. He tried to lure him there because he's trying to beg Booker to leave the NWO and come back to be friends with Goldust. They kind of become a little bit buddy-buddy leading up to that. And Booker thought the NWO was a better opportunity, but Goldust is begging him not to do that. This is pretty funny. I like this. And Booker runs off. We see his ass, and he takes off.
He's got like half his underwear on. And
then Goldust has the nightgown on.
Yeah. I bought this nice nightgown for nothing.
Yeah. It was. I like this whole. It was good. And Booker and Goldust, as we'll see, are very, very good together.
Yeah.
And now that's kind of starts here. So
yeah, it's quite hilarious.
Good stuff.
So, all right, let's take a break. When we come back, we've got three matches left, I believe. Three matches left, and including my favorite gimmick of all time comes back after a couple years. We also have the Undisputed Championship on the line as well. But first, a word or many, because.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out The Kevin Kelly Show each and every week, placetobenation.com. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today, plus be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, placetobenation.com.
Let me know you in the house.
This is the king of old school, Steve Corino, and you've heard all the rumors, and it's true. The Steve Corino Show is here. We talk about wrestling. We talk about baseball, movies, television, anything you want to talk about. New guest every week. That's right. The Steve Corino Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
Hey, this is Bauer from The Bauer Show, sports and more. You can check out The Bauer Show podcast every Wednesday and Friday right here at placetobenation.com.
The Bauer Show.
Chad, do you hate it when commercials run and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on placetobenation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast exclusively at placetobenation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and... Shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds terrible. The Titans are wrestling... Oh, brilliant. Sorry. The Titans are wrestling off.
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for a show at Breakdown Matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Pop. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling. You know you want to hear it.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week you can join Marcus Vandenberg, Big Nasty Alfred Kunawa, and myself on the Kings of Sports podcast, available exclusively on placetobenation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
Hey, this is Ben Morse from Marvel.com as well as the Brad and Chad Show, and I've got a new podcast. Well, I'm part of a new podcast, Place to Be Nation's Main Event. Hosted by Scott Criscolo every other week, it's a roundtable discussion with myself, Andrew Reich, Steve Willey, Jordan Duncan, and an assortment of special guests as we talk wrestling today, the big questions, and our feelings. Please, please, please check this podcast out, because if the ratings go down, I know I'm the first head on the chopping block for Justin Rosero. See you guys every other week on Place to Be Nation's Main Event.
I'm Scott Criscolo, and your new home for sports is Place to Be Nation's Extra Point. Join me and the doctor, Giorgio Bellino, for your sports hookup, whether it's NFL, Major League Baseball, NBA, colleges, or the Cowboys MMA Blitz.
Forget about it. Plus, join me for my prescription where I will solve all the world's sports problems with my own brand of medicine.
That's Place to Be Nation's Extra Point here on PlaceToBeNation.com.
In Rhode Island and looking for great food and a fun atmosphere, we'll be sure to stop by Bonehead's Wing Bar, 131 Washington Street in West Warwick, with over 65 different wing sauces and dozens of sandwiches, burgers, and appetizers. In a fully stocked bar, Bonehead's has something for everyone. Bonehead's also shows every WWE and UFC pay-per-view, features live music, weekly trivia, and much, much more. So be sure to stop in, tell Matt and the crew that Place to Be Nation sent you, and become a Bonehead today.
What's up, wrestling fans? This is Jeff Peck, and you can check out my wrestling podcast, The Still Real to Us Show, every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com. It is a wrestling podcast from a fan's perspective, and we're not doing it in our mom's basement. So check it out every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com.
It's still real to me, damn it!
Looking for new wrestling, sports, and pop culture voices? Head over to PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. We have an extremely talented staff that covers comics, video games, and all facets of entertainment. Our sports coverage spans all the major professional and collegiate sports, including MMA. Our fresh takes on professional wrestling are some of the best on the internet. Don't forget to check out our fantastic podcasts as well, including the voice of Ring of Honor, Kevin Kelly, exclusively at PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Also, be sure to check out our friends at thehistoryofwwe.com, ProWrestlingOnly.com, Scott Keith blog at RSPWFAQ.net, and PileDriverWrestling.net.
Hey, this is Ed Banger Thrasher, and you're listening to Where? What the fuck is it? The Place to Be podcast. So you better not miss it, because I'm on it.
All right, we are back, nation, looking at Judgment Day. 2002. First, though, we're going to take you through PlaceToBeNation.com. Scott, as you may know, 24 is back tonight.
Yes, it is. I am DVRing the first episode right now.
And as you may or may not know, Jordan Duncan did a look back at 24, and he ranked all the seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And that is up right now. For anyone who's a 24 junkie and wants to kind of get amped back up for the show, you should visit there and read Jordan's piece. It's been a juggernaut for the site ever since it was created.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Chad Campbell did his Vintage Vault previewing for Judgment Day 02. As we mentioned, he did a Kurt Angle versus Edge. Ewan McGinn went inside the Legends House for episode number 3.
Yep. Rubber ducky, bucky ducky, yucky ducky.
Flocko Flamingo. Flocko Flamingo.
Such a mess.
A lot of weird shit. Gene has some really good lines on this one, though. He was my favorite character in this episode.
Yeah, he does.
A Place to Be Network, Extreme Rules 2014 reaction podcast. Mm-hmm. Will, joined by Chris Zellner, Pete S., and Johnny Sorrow from Titans of Wrestling. Right after the show ended, they went on the podcast and talked about it. So if you want to hear their take on all of Extreme Rules, you can do that right there. You can also relive through the live blog. They had pretty much the whole main event crew was in there talking. Plus,
yes.
I think Chad and Brad popped in as well. So be sure to visit that. Joel Barnhart had his first power rankings for Major League Baseball, April 2014. He'll be doing that monthly. House of Horror with Jeremy Nichols looked at The Wicker Man from 1973. Total Divas doing Total Divas, my favorite Andrew Reich slip-up of all time. Week 6, Season 3, you can read that. The Five Count, Scott, the staff got together and looked at their favorite WrestleMania rematches, since, of course, the April pay-per-view often has those rematches from the big show. We went back and counted our favorites. We had a new episode of the Still Real to Us show, plus all the other podcasts, including Episode 2 of the Steve Carino show. Was up with special guest Rob Dimension, so check that out. Always a great listen. You had all your recaps, SmackDown Superstars, The Honor Report from Stephen Sutton, Ryan Everett, main event. We had the High Spot with Steve and Glenn previewing Money in the Bank, or I should say Money in the Piggy Bank, because they looked at the WLC match, which I liked a lot. I really enjoyed that. Mm-hmm. I thought it was pretty funny. Roger Morissette finished his two-part series of his Cowboys Goes to Class overall series, looking at Shawn Michaels and Undertaker from WrestleMania 25 and 26. So over the last week, he looked at their matches from Ground Zero and Bad Blood in Rumble 98, and then he moved ahead 10 years later and looked at their matches from WrestleMania 25 and 26. So good stuff there from Roger. Episode 17 of The Bauer Show, looking at Donald Sterling. I keep wanting to say Roger Sterling. Donald Sterling getting banned. You can go ahead and check that out as well with Michael Bauer and Jeff Peck. The Hard Traveling Fanboys are going off the page, looking at X-Men Dangerous. Of course, episode 8 of the main event previewed Extreme Rules, plus some other. I think you talked TNA in there, right? I'm pretty sure there's some TNA talk, so check that out. We had episode 8 of the Kevin Kelly Show with a great interview with Brutal Bob Evans.
Mm-hmm.
Also made a couple of announcements for future guests. DDP will be on next week's episode, so check that out. And Kevin gave his Extreme Rules predictions, which we'll break down next week as well.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, he doesn't watch anything, so we'll see how he did. Ben Morse built his all-time April pay-per-view card, and that plays off, Scott, the ones we do here. Compared his to ours. We reposted the Vintage Vault from Survivor Series 1996 because it was Rock's birthday last week.
Yes.
So we went ahead and reposted that in honor of his debut, and also had some audio from Kevin Kelly back when he came on with us to talk about the fall of 1996. So we included that audio right there for you if you want to go back and listen to that. If you never heard it, if you're new to the show or new to the site, you can check that out. Stephen Graham had a new episode of the Pro Wrestling Super Show, was joined by Pete from Titans and Todd Gessling, looking at their favorite wrestling monsters. Like I said, I look at Steven's show as the PWI of PTBN. All kind of weird topics and cool, you know, looks into different areas of pro wrestling history. And also, Scott, we had a good piece by Katie Price and Derek Cornett honoring Bob Hoskins. Passed away on, of course, had been born back in 1942. Best known possibly for Who Framed Roger Rabbit, plus a whole bunch of other roles popped up in movies left and right. So check all that out. All your favorite pieces, PlacementNation.com, your weekly articles, all your podcasts, right there for you. We may have another couple cool ones in the works, too, that we're working on. So hopefully we'll have some more announcements coming. Info at PlaceToBeNation.com if you want to take part. Follow us at Facebook.com/PlaceToBeNation as well. So there you go. Why don't we get to stepping?
Yes, we do.
Certain WWF commissioner, we want to say.
All right, PlaceToBeNation.com. All right, time now for
time
one
to
half.
Play the game.
Oh, my life. I pray for someone like you. Yes, I'm made.
amazing how you knock me off my feet. I won't go.
I always like how they're all about you becoming one with Triple H. That's all the theme of these songs.
Yes. All right. So we lost the title at Backlash to Hulk Hogan, to Hollywood Hulk Hogan. And I got to be honest with you, I wasn't sure. When the next night on Raw, I thought to myself, I don't know if he's going to actually get a rematch. Are they going to want to watch that again? I don't know. Well, of course, we all know that somebody won a number one contenders match at Backlash. So that's going on in the back of everyone's mind. So, JR, how did we get to where we are now after Triple H? The day comes where you start playing the Honey soundtrack, we're going to be in a lot of trouble. okay. How did we get to where we are now from Backlash?
All right. Then after Backlash, Triple H attacked The Undertaker, who was arrested. 3 days later on SmackDown, Triple H challenged Hulk Hogan to a rematch for the Undisputed title. Vince came out and put the kibosh on that, saying he never gave Chris Jericho his rematch after WrestleMania. So that night, Jericho defeated Triple H in a number one contenders match thanks to The Undertaker's interference. Jericho received the title match with Hogan for the following week. SmackDown, another cool match. Hogan had a lot of cool TV matches during the stretch. Thanks to Triple H's interference, Hogan retained the title on that match. The following week on the 5-9 SmackDown from Bridgeport, Mr. McMahon, who's furious that Triple H interfered when he wasn't supposed to and made his disdain for the game clear. Triple H came out and got beat down by five superstars, including Lance Storm and Christian. While Triple H was getting beat down, Vince announces he'll now face Jericho at Judgment Day in a Hell in a Cell match. Later in the show, Triple H would lose to Reverend D-Von, thanks to Jericho's interference. Later in the show, during a match involving Angle and Jericho battling Hogan and Edge, Triple H came out with a sledgehammer, nailing everyone. Vince came out, and Triple H took a swing at him, but Jericho knocked Triple H down with a steel chair first.
Incidentally, JR, I was at that SmackDown in Bridgeport, and I believe that that is the first ever wrestling show in at the arena.
Yeah.
The arena opened that previous October. Obviously, that was the first season of the Bridgeport Sound Tigers. And I believe that is the first, I'll have to look at it in Graham's book, but I'm pretty sure that is the first wrestling show in Bridgeport. In fact, I can almost guarantee it is. And I was there. I was there when he swung the sledgehammer and everything. It was pretty cool. Now, mind you, just incidentally, the New Haven Coliseum was still open.
Mm-hmm.
Barely, but it was still open. We'll get more into my old home later on in the year.
Interesting around this time, too, just to note, Chris Jericho, and I think we mentioned this before, but had really been firing back at his internet critics. A
yes.
Sect of fans had panned this match due to the lack of a big death-defying spot. And I remember that being an issue during these Hell in a Cells, really immediately post the flurry of like big crazy spots we had.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of people getting pissed off that they were even kind of having them if they didn't have a big spot planned or involve guys that weren't able to have, you know, big flying off the cage spots.
Right.
A month or so later, things flared up again, which we'll talk to at King of the Ring. Jericho fired back with some really vicious blog posts and then shut down his website. Many believed he was either just trying to work his heel character or maybe he had really kind of snapped about it. But so I just remember this being a very tumultuous time with Jericho and the fan base.
Okay. There is a slight continuity problem with this storyline, though. Vince says that he never gave Chris Jericho his rematch after WrestleMania. Okay, two problems with that sentence. Number one, Vince is the one that named Hogan
right.
for the match at Backlash. So if
he's
you were
a
that
heel.
Hard,
he doesn't have to tell the truth.
Yeah, well, that's true. And number two, didn't Jericho get his match on Raw when Triple H pinned Stephanie and got rid of her? Wasn't that technically his rematch?
Yes, also true.
So
Although Stephanie was involved, so I guess you could argue he never got his one-on-one chance.
His one-on-one rematch. Oh, boy. Okay, so that's possible. But still, Vince had a chance to give Jericho his rematch at Backlash, and instead he gave it to Hogan, so that's... But that was on camera.
Right.
Do you find it fairly funny that Hulk Hogan probably had more title matches, title defenses,
I know, right?
This 1 month than he did the entire 3 months he had it after WrestleMania 9? I think it's pretty funny. We'll talk more about Hogan in a few minutes.
Yeah, I agree. This is what 93 should have been on TV.
Pretty much.
Good blow off to this feud though here in the cell. I thought it kept both guys busy.
Yep.
Which was good. Cole and Taz again run down the show. Again, loaded cards in this time frame.
Yes.
We really had a lot of loaded shows.
Yes.
Immediate slugfest. Triple H batters Jericho around ringside, uses the post and the cage. A lot of hard throws and aggression, which I thought made it feel heavier than Mania immediately.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of anger here. Jericho slices his arm up, which is a nice touch. Pretty gross as well. A lot of weapon shots, a lot of cage grating. I thought it was a well-booked cage match, and actually made me think, why even use the cell here? I thought maybe it should have been a straight-up cage instead. It would have fit more of their old school, what they were going for.
Right.
A lot of weapon shots, a lot of grating on the cage. It felt like it would have been better suited as just an old style cage match. A lot of stiff Triple H chair shots, very physical. Hunter would bleed as well, and then we get the ugliest bump of the match, and that is Tim White. The referee gets bumped off the apron into the cell and then falls and wrenches his shoulder out of his socket.
Yeah.
Ends up with a dislocated shoulder. Jericho then beats the shit out of him afterwards. Poor Tim White fucking blades. Other referees come in to check on him, and that would actually end up ending his career for the most part. He would try and come back at he does a match at WrestleMania 20, but his shoulder kept popping out and ends up pretty much ending his refereeing career here because his shoulder would never be the same after it's dislocated in this match.
Yeah.
A lot of big chair shots. Jericho escapes out the door. They fight around ringside. I thought they should have maybe stayed in the cell. I was kind of done with the brawling around ringside thing. But it actually ended up being pretty good. Triple H hits a DDT on the table. They go up top with a barbed wire 2x4. Jericho uses it first. Again, I thought this was a really good blood feud blow off. Much better than Mania right by this point. Jericho seems much more of a threat here than I thought he did at Mania. It doesn't feel as much as a layup. Both guys, I thought, were actually acting slighted and screwed. I thought that brought not anger at each other as much either. Anger at their position. Anger that, you know, Jericho pissed that his title reign got squashed like it did, and Hunter pissed that his got cut so short. So you can almost feel the anger here kind of brewing over by both men wanting to go out and steal the show. I liked the walls on the roof. I thought that was a cool spot. A lot of back and forth with the bat, and then Hunter would hit the pedigree. And I thought this was a really, really good Hell in a Cell match. A lot of blood, a lot of anger. And I thought it could have been great in a steel cage, and as is, it's great in the cell, but I thought just for some reason in a cage without the roof stuff, I thought this could have really felt like a more of a be-all, end-all. But as it is, I think it's kind of an overlooked cell match. I think it was actually way better than many may remember it as.
I was actually just about to ask you that. Do you did you care about them going on the roof? I didn't think they needed it. Didn't faze me.
No. I definitely don't think they needed it. I would agree with you there. I thought what they ended up doing was okay. Like, I was actually, all right, you know, it wasn't that bad. I thought it was fine, but I don't think that they probably needed to do it.
Right. No. No, I don't think they needed to either. But that's fine. It doesn't hurt the match.
Not at all. It just wasn't necessary.
It was unnecessary. And having Kyoto having to climb up the side, I mean, did you really want to put a ref in danger like that? You know what I'm saying? But I agree with you about the whole chip on your shoulder thing. I think that they really took the angst to the next level. I think it needed to be in a cell, or some type of structure. The cage would have been, cage would have been perfectly fine with me. There was no need for it's our first cage. It's obviously, we'll say it's our first cell match since Triple H beat Cactus at No Way Out 2000. I don't think it was necessary, but it doesn't hurt. You know, I'm a cage mark, and a cell mark, so I'm fine with it either way. This could be Triple H's best match of this little face run.
Oh yeah, easily, I thought.
You know, because
although I like the Hogan match, but this one,
the Hogan match was good. This was better, but I did like the Hogan match, and well, we won't even get to next month until next week. But I definitely think that there was a little chip on your shoulder action with this match. I think both Jericho and Triple H really wanted to prove that they're still studs, and you know they mm-hmm. feel hosed that they had no gold, and you know they wanted to take the show away from the main event to a certain extent, and I don't want to say they did, but they definitely made their mark. And Triple H gets the anticipated victory with the pedigree on the roof. So great cage match. Try to find it if you don't have this show. I'm sure it's on the Hell in a Cell compilation.
It's on the network. Just watch it there.
No, that's true.
You should have.
So. I know. It's the first time that I forgot. That's actually the first time since it launched that I actually forgot that that was a source. But yeah, watch it on the network. Okay. And if you just want the match,
just fast forward on the network.
I guess you can type in search and go to it. Ask Andrew Reese.
The fast forward, the Roku fast forward is super fast.
Like, is it really?
It blows through the show quickly.
Does it really? I'm looking forward to when the network hits my Amazon Fire TV, because that fast forward is pretty good for regular TV shows. So I'm looking forward to the network going on that. And it's pretty good on like iPads. On computers, it's a little shaky at times. If you try and pinpoint it, it's kind of a pain in the ass. But in any event, that's neither here nor there. Great match, and Triple H wins. Okay. Next up, our...
I think we might have to analyze on one of these episodes which individual wrestler may have had the greatest run of theme songs of all time. Billy Gunn's going to be up there. Billy Gunn's going to be up there.
It's funny because today, I was watching this. I had a kind of a quiet morning, so I had this on in the background. And Rotella had on... he had on WrestleMania 11. But at the same time this match came on for me, he got the Guns against mm-hmm. Owen and Yoko. And he messages me. We have like the internal messaging, and he goes, and he could see my screen because my desk is positioned that way. And he goes, "You and I are both watching a Billy Gunn match at the same time." And I said, "I have the better theme song." He goes, "I have the better partner." I said, "Bart Gunn could never rock the ponytails."
That's right.
We went into this whole debate, but anyway. Shucky. By now though, Rikishi or Chuck didn't have it anyway. Chuck Palumbo cut his hair, but all right, Billy and Chuck, your tag team champions, taking on a guy that you think just does not belong here. Explain why he's in this situation.
All right. Well, it's Rikishi and a mystery partner. So on the 5/16 SmackDown, Rikishi defeated Rico, the stylist of Billy and Chuck, in a one-on-one match. After the match, Billy, Chuck, and Rico whined to Vince, but he said he was ashamed of the loss. So he made this match here tonight and said Rikishi's partner would be named later on, and we don't get the announcement until the match began. And that announcement was Rico would be Rikishi's partner.
Stupid.
You know, I really liked Billy and Chuck. I thought they were smooth in the gimmick. Vince ends up making Rico the partner to punish him and Billy and Chuck. I was so sick of Rikishi here. I thought he was so played out. I had zero interest in him at all. Like, I just, the look, the music, everything. I was just done with him. Completely 100%, 1000% done with him.
Yeah, no need for him anymore. Nothing, no room on the roster for him. There's just no need for him to be here. And the fact that the titles changed made it even worse, because Billy and Chuck didn't deserve this. They were in a great run.
Oh, and that's even worse. Yeah. So Billy and Chuck double team to start a long opening heat segment. The crowd is completely flat for Rikishi's comeback. Rico gets wiped out by Palumbo by accident. And then Rico wiped out Palumbo by accident. And then Rikishi pins him to take the titles. Stupid booking. A complete waste of Billy and Chuck's reign. Pointless. Rikishi's going nowhere fast. He's just done. 100% done. And why do you... I don't know. It's not played up like Rico is not turning on that. It made no sense. I don't get it. And then, you know, Rico kind of sheepishly takes the belt and it's kind of smirking about it. But yeah. It made no sense to me to do this at all. I remember when... This is one in particular. I remember when Adam told me the result on the phone. And I was like, what the fuck? I thought it was stupid then and I think it's stupid now. I thought it was just utterly pointless. Rikishi.
It was pointless.
Rikishi needs to go away. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's just move on. Rikishi and Rico are the tag team champions. We hope they don't last long.
Why? Yeah. And it's pissed me off that they ended Billy and Chuck's reign this way.
Yeah.
Like I said, building it towards something better. That's all.
I know. Terrible. Terrible. Okay. Time for our main event. The Undisputed.
Well, actually, before we get to that, one last thing here. So Kurt Angle jumps Edge in the back.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
And drags him out to the barber chair. Edge takes a nice bump off the ramp, kind of flat bump onto the barber platform.
Yep.
Yep. Edge flips Kurt around, hits a pretty legit looking choke sleeper. He really chokes him out. Yeah. Thoroughly shaves him down. We get a pretty good payoff to that match and feud. So Angle's now bald. Edge gets the deed done.
Mm. So there we go. What were your thoughts on this new era for Kurt? Sure, it wasn't going to grow back, or he wasn't going to bother.
Right, yeah, a new look, and definitely, as we'll talk about, kind of becomes a change in his attitude a bit as well. So, I should mention as well, Kurt had been dodging him backstage throughout the night. We had the one where he's in the makeup chair with a little shower cap on.
Yeah, and the Edge little shower by. Cap on, yeah.
And also, we didn't get to mention Maven and Tori at WWE New York drinking, or I'm sorry, the World, drinking a giant fucking like margarita or whatever.
Yeah, it's like a scorpion bowl of
yeah,
tequila.
It was nuts, so, and Tori making all sexual innuendos at Maven, so.
Yes. And then Lawler says something like, why do the nerds get the best dates? And
yeah.
And JR says something like, what do you want to date your niece or the usual underage nonsense? Okay, now time for our main event. The WWE Undisputed Championship. Your champion, since Backlash, legendary Hollywood Hulk Hogan, beat Triple H, taking on the guy who won a number one contenders match at Backlash over Steve Austin, and that is, of course, The Undertaker. First time these two have met on pay-per-view since... What was the show that they kept pimping?
I don't know. Maybe if we go back and watch Survivor Series 91, we can remember.
We could just watch it because they mention it every 35 seconds. Oh, yeah. This Tuesday in Texas!
Oh, yeah, right! That is the last time they fought
1-on-1,
but don't forget, they also went to war in the 1992 Royal Rumble. So that
yes,
was,
he did.
Before we get called out by Ryan Schmuck. That was they did compete in that match.
You know, Ryan Schmuck, that wasn't a singles match, okay? Right. Okay, so, but let's talk about the build, and then I want to ask a question about them, the two of them. So how did we get to this point?
It kicked into high gear on the April 29th Raw. After a face-to-face confrontation earlier in the night, The Undertaker assaulted Hogan in a match with William Regal, another cool Hogan match. Taker pounded on Hogan, beat him with a buckle of his weightlifting belt, and busted Hogan open. Taker left him a bloody beaten mess. The following week, Hogan fired back by stealing Taker's bike, rode it backstage, and ran it over with a semi-tractor trailer. That was a rather infamous scene as Hogan couldn't get the bike started. And they
it
had
took
to cut,
like 6 minutes.
They had to cut to JR and King until they could get the bike fired up and Hogan could ride it. Things boiled over a week later when Taker wiped out Hogan with a tire iron backstage. He then hogtied Hulk's ankles to his bike and sped off, dragging Hogan around the backstage area. This caused even more laughs around the internet as Hogan happened to be leaving the building with a huge leather jacket on before being attacked, something we had never really seen before. Yeah. Add to that, the Taker swings Hogan into a pile of pipes and cardboard boxes, and the whole bike dragging is a bit hokey. Either way, the match had some good heat, but probably not what they were looking for. And I liked the initial beatdown. I kind of liked the stuff with the belt whipping and the blood.
Yeah.
It was the bike stuff that got kind of hokey and stupid with the semi once again. Did you feel like the nostalgia already felt played out?
No.
Still running wild for you?
The nostalgia was. I bought a shirt that night at that show in Bridgeport. I bought my first Hulkamania shirt since 1991, I think, or 90. Two things here. Number one, I just realized as I'm watching that clip today when they were playing the build on the network, didn't that? Maybe it's because Hogan was in it, but didn't that whole bike dragging thing seem very Nitro-ish?
Yeah.
That seemed like something you'd see
on. It seemed more attitude. It seemed more attitude era thing.
Yeah, but even more, it almost seemed like a Nitro or Thunder thing, you know. Number two, I feel like they should have talked more about their past.
Yeah, they really don't talk about it at all.
Like they should have said, you know, Hogan, this is my chance to get mine back because you screwed me through ashes in my face, whatever, and that, you know, and that. And Taker should like badmouth Jack Tunney. I think they should.
I don't know if they should have went that far, but I do think they should have brought up at least the their past feud, which they really don't mention at all.
No.
The Hogan ratings bloom was starting to wilt, and that's why they get the title off him quickly here. And 2002 becomes a kind of an interesting year for Vince backstage because the ratings really go up and down quite a bit, and he reacts a lot week to week and month to month on the ratings bit. So. Hogan, good.
No, I was about to say, no, before you say, I just went quickly. I didn't think, I loved Hogan still as champ. I was kind of bummed, to be honest with you. I thought they could have kept it going.
I think maybe one more month. Maybe one more. I don't think you want to go too much longer than that, because then you become all the shit you made fun of in WCW. Like, it's fine for the kind of the 1 or 2 month nostalgia run, but if you start really making him the top guy, so I think the difference here is WCW positioned all those guys as the top dogs. Here, I feel like Hogan is the top guy, the champion, but he's not really been positioned that way. Like, he's almost being positioned as a nostalgia guy that somehow won the belt more than the best
the top
wrestler
guy.
In the company.
Right.
There's so many other big names that it would be farcical to do that.
Mm.
To say he was the best wrestler when you have Triple H, Steve Austin,
Jericho,
Eddie Guerrero, all these other guys, you know, all these other guys on the roster, even Undertaker would have been great at this point. To say Hogan was the best competitor, Kurt Angle, Edge, you know, to say Hogan's the best guy would have been kind of silly. So I'm glad they don't really go that route.
Yeah, no, I agree. I enjoyed the nostalgia thing. I didn't want it to go not immediately, but logistically, yeah, it makes sense. I have to admit that I would have been happy maybe one more month, but
right.
But you're right. You know, your logic there is 100% correct. Hulk Hogan is not the Hulk Hogan of 1987. He's not even the Hulk Hogan of 1996.
Right.
So
he's the guy who had a match and he won it.
And
that's really it. So, and he's still working his ass off. Like, I think he works pretty hard in this match still. And
look at
TV.
These guys. Look at these guys we've talked about. JR, Regal.
Yeah. Triple H, Jericho. He's had a lot of good matches. Teaming with Edge, and he's really had his working boots on during this run. And I think it's been pretty entertaining. You know, Taker earned the shot with his great turnaround. Mm-hmm. He had ensured Hogan won a backlash, so he'd get the shot on the Raw side. He's got his new instrumental theme here, Scott, rolling no more. He'll gain some words over the coming weeks, he's got more of a dedicated theme to himself now.
Ba-dum.
And it made sense because Roland was still getting a wicked pop, so they had to do something.
I like the riff.
Oh, definitely. And I thought Hogan looked pretty good with the belt strapped around his waist, actually. Maybe I was getting wrapped in the nostalgia. I don't know, but I thought it was pretty cool.
Oh, looking. Seeing Hogan with the belt was actually both were wearing cool belts. Taker was still wearing Hogan's workout weightlifting belt,
yes,
which was pretty cool
right.
when he came in.
Yeah,
and then Hogan wearing the title it did. It brought a symbolic tear to my eye seeing the Kool-Aid was flowing through my veins for just those few moments.
Oh, definitely.
But then reality had to set in. All right, I will say this. This match is not an unwatchable piece of crap.
Let me go through still some of the spots, and then we'll discuss the match.
Okay, go ahead. Okay,
A lot of basic brawling, and then Hogan does a superplex, which blew my mind.
That was crazy, yeah.
Taker works over the leg, blocks the leg drop into a single crab, which is crazy, and they're really trying hard to be different. The crowd's really into it. Taker, the worst spot was the chokeslam, where Hogan kind of gets placed down. Vince comes out, ties up the ref, so he doesn't see Hogan hit the leg drop. Hogan hits a punch, leg drops Vince. To me, it was a big markout moment as well. First time him and Vince had really gone at it. Taker gets Hogan in the back of the head with a pretty good chair shot, and then another shitty chokeslam. I thought this match was much better than it had any right to be. It was kind of a sloppy, messy brawl, but a lot of energy. I liked the superplex. Some of the spots they did were different. They could have went out there and done the usual Hogan Taker punch, punch, kick, kick, brawl, but I thought they really worked hard to make it stand out. I thought Taker had earned this title run. After the match, he busted up Hogan's throat with a chair. Maybe it was too rushed to take the belt off Hogan, but I thought, again, Taker had really earned it with all the hard work he had put out.
There's no doubt that that since he turned in November, that Taker really worked himself up to this point where he deserved the title. It's frustrating because, you know, this is where I think a lot of internet writers and podcast hosts and things like that, not just us, but even back then, sometimes they just have to admit when you differentiate between a fan and an analyst. Anybody who was a Hogan fan, not just if you weren't when you were a kid, then that's fine. But if you were an Orange Goblin follower back in the day, like I was, like you were, like many were, and you didn't have that, wow, man, so cool to see him with a belt. I know it shouldn't last, and it's not logistically right, and we all bitched in WCW, but just for this little moment, this is really cool. Then you get into the match, and then the analyst comes back. You go, all right, well, it's time to move on. And you know, I'm not ashamed of saying that it was nice to see him with the belt on him, and I bought the T-shirt at the Bridgeport SmackDown, and. It was cool. Now, having said that, obviously, on paper, I think everybody looked at this match and said, ugh. But And it wasn't stellar, but after what you had mentioned to me over the weekend when you watched it, and then I watched it today, these two guys, I think, almost had the same philosophy that maybe Triple H and Jericho had two matches before. Like, well, these young fuckers think they can take our show. Right. Well, let's, you know, let's go out there and do it. And I think, I mean, Hogan with a superplex, he never did that in fucking WCW when he was younger. Much less now.
Hogan,
you know,
Hogan's like how hard he's working is infectious to me. Like,
yeah,
he's really impressive in this run. He didn't have to do this, and he's really working hard to put guys over and and have good matches. And it's a match only 11 minutes, and I enjoyed it. I really did. I'm not saying it's great. I'm not saying it's good. I just really enjoyed it, and I thought it was much better than you may think it should have been. Like, I think we've seen a lot worse main events in WWE, you know, lore, legend.
I agree.
I think we've seen a lot less in the canon than what we get here.
But I agree. Yeah, but the chokeslam was, thank God that didn't end the show. What ended the show was was a chair shot.
The chokeslams were bad. Those were the I mean, this is where you kind of said, oh, God, Hogan. But I thought the match itself was pretty intense. And the crowd loved it. The crowd was red hot for it.
Oh, yeah. No, the Southern crowd, I think the Southern crowd, the Nashville crowd, still kind of had a little bit of that WCW nostalgia. So I think that kind of helped a little bit, too. Because a lot of their pay-per-views, they were in Nashville a lot.
Right.
The last, like, 3 years, like 98, 99 in WCW. I know there was a lot of Starcades in there, and I think there were some clashes and some other. So they were in Nashville a lot from like 90, right from the NWO started. I would say from 96 all the way to like closed. As a matter of fact, I don't think, was Greed? No, Greed was in Jacksonville. One of the last like three or four pay-per-views. It might have been Super Brawl.
Saturday?
I don't know. Super Brawl Revenge. Was that the, yeah, that was it. I think that was in Nashville. So I think their second to last pay-per-view, barely a year before, was in Nashville.
Mm.
So I think the crowd was kind of hot anyway, seeing Hogan, because they had been getting used to him.
Can you afford to pay me to wrestle, Ron?
I don't know.
Super Bowl Revenge was in 2000, and that was in Nashville. I'm sorry, 2001 from Nashville. Yep.
Okay. Yeah, that was the February show, because March was Greed, and January was
Sin.
Yeah, Sin. So I think that part of it helped too. But yeah, go to.
I always think of that when I think of all the Seven Deadly Sins, Sin, Greed, Sloth, Super Brawl.
Super Brawl, Saturday. I don't know. Even if you don't want to watch the whole show, go on the network, just search Undertaker versus Hulk Hogan, and it takes you right, you know, you can click on it, and you go to the file, and it goes right to that match.
Mm-hmm.
I think you'll be amazed. Just give it a minute. Let it develop, and get the choke slams out of your head.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, and again, look, we're not putting it over to some work rate Marvel.
Yeah.
I just think it's better. Like, I was going into it with the memory of it really bad, and I was actually pretty impressed that it wasn't. So,
yeah,
and again, Hogan's hard work has been really infectious during this time period.
I agree.
He's really worked hard.
Regal match.
I want to see some of these. Once Raws and SmackDowns are uploaded more on the network, or if I track some down, I want to see some of these Hogan TV matches. I know I saw them a lot at the time.
The Hogan Jericho one is, I think, on the, whatever, the 15 years, or what is it, 10 years of SmackDown, or whatever it was, that set that came out, the top 100 that they did. I think it's on there, the Jericho-Hogan match. Pretty sure it's on there. Is it on the Undisputed set? I'm not sure. I know it's on one of the compilations, the Jericho match on SmackDown. Regal, I doubt it. How about the Flair one? That's interesting. We'll have to dig up these TV matches. Anyway, The Undertaker is now a four-time World Wrestling Entertainment champion. First time in 3 years. 3 years to the month, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Because he won it at the SAD Over the Edge 99.
That's right. So,
were you happy with having Undertaker in this spot? Were you happy with him as champion?
Yeah, I think he deserved it. I don't, again, kind of like Hogan, I don't think he should have too long of a run, but I don't think it was a bad choice. I think he's worked really hard since December. Although I do think the only goofy part is we have a really loaded roster of young, talented guys, and like Hogan and Taker are kind of on top, which is kind of weird.
Yeah.
But that's rectified quickly. And the fact that these are all short title reigns make it okay to me. And yeah. Again, the fact that they weren't building up Hogan as the top dog, just as the guy who happened to be the champion, kind of made it. It was almost like a shock that he beat Triple H. Like, it wasn't expected to happen, and he did, and they kind of play it off that way.
Exactly. And one more thing that I'm happy for Taker is finally, of his four WWE title reigns, he finally has one where there's no shit surrounding it. Like, he is the focal point.
Right, yeah.
Remember, 91, he was nothing more than a pawn in the whole Hogan, Flair, Vince, Sid, whatever shit show was going on backstage, storyline-wise, or, you know, creative-wise. Wins it at WrestleMania 13, and that summer is nothing but Shawn and Brett and Steve, and you almost forget Taker's champion. He's, like, again, lost in the background. Then he wins it over the Edge, and nobody cares, really, obviously. And that title reign's forgotten. Finally, for the first time in his career, Taker has a title feud where he is the focal point and there was nothing in his way. No interference, no static, no noise, whether it's backstage creative or shitty feuds or other guys trumping him. He is the guy right now for the first time in his career as champion. No deaths, no other feuds that are better right now.
Right.
Taker is the guy right now. And I think that's what also makes this what turns out to be, a pretty good reign. Because finally he's earned the right to be the man instead of having all this other shit around him, deaths and better feuds. And
yeah, definitely.
You know, so that's another reason why I really love us discussing these next couple of pay-per-views, because I think Taker finally deserves a little respect and cred as a world champion that he didn't get in any of the first three feuds, where he was just a pawn in everybody else's shit. So there you go. The Undertaker, your new WWE Undisputed Champion and four-time champion.
So this match was kind of weird. The matches I expected to be really good kind of disappointed me a little bit. I thought Backlash's additions were better. The matches I wasn't expecting much from kind of won me over. The Cell, the Austin match, and Hogan Taker. So I think overall, I think the show was kind of a slight thumbs up. I enjoyed watching it, maybe because I haven't seen it a lot of times, and I didn't know what to expect, but I dug it. I think it's a weird dichotomy versus Backlash. I think maybe top to bottom it's a little bit better than Backlash, but the match balance is different. If that makes sense?
Yes,
Formatics,
it does make sense.
As some would say.
Yeah, no, it does make sense. Yes, formatapitapapics, non sequitur addicts. No, I think it's perfect. I think it was perfectly laid together. Much better show than I remember.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, if you're out there and you have time, you're on the network, pop it on. I don't think you'd be disappointed. I think it'll be a fun couple hours for you to enjoy. So there you go.
Yeah, a lot of cool stuff with 2002.
Yeah, and more to come.
Yes, a lot to come.
No, I was about to say, good champion. We actually have a nice roster and more youth on the way.
And we will now into the WWE era.
Yes.
All right. So Wednesday night, Scott, we had teased we're going to do something a little unique, and we've kind of finally locked it down. So we're doing a WWE Network live watch. We're going to have Steve Willey. Mm-hmm. We're going to have Roger Morissette and hopefully Chad Campbell on with us. And we are going to watch the first two episodes of Raw on the network, and we're going to talk during them. We're going to talk about what's going on screen. We'll bullshit a bit. And we have this idea to kind of do maybe like a monthly or every 6 weeks kind of live watch. We'll bring in some of the PlaceToBeNation.com staff members to join us to watch some stuff. And, Scott, we kind of have the idea of, you know, what fits the format, what fits the show. And we thought, well, why don't we just do Raw? It'll give us another track to go through, more chronology, which we enjoy. So our plan right now is to do live watches of all the Raws in order with the different staff members here and there. Over the, you know, maybe once a month, once every 5 weeks or so. So starting this Wednesday, we watch episodes 1 and 2 from January of 1993.
I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, and I'm kind of looking forward to going back tonight because we're so far removed now from that time period. It'll be kind of refreshing to go back and revisit some of the stuff that we talked about almost 2 years ago at this point. So it'll be a lot of fun to do that. So we look forward to that Wednesday with Steve, Roger, and Chad. Next Monday, we're back here with King of the Ring 02, and then Wednesday will be episode 9 of Kevin Kelly with Diamond Dallas Page and episode 9 of the main event as well. So, Scott, we'll talk to you Wednesday. Until then, everyone take care. We're going to talk about talk about Buddy on this Nashville. Plate. I can't wait to shave Armento set at Matt's party. Put him in the sleeper.
Yeah. Well, it'll only take like 20 seconds, so I wouldn't worry about it.
Maybe him or Rotella should have a hair versus hair match. And
oh, great.
Quick aftermath.
Yeah, it'll be, the WLC of hair versus hair.
Yes. Yes, it will be. Well, WLC. Oh, all right, I can say it. Just in case the young girl likes to clap. Aim for the win, but before I begin, I'll initiate the Buddy with a slap.
Now for the next, I'm the cutie from a Tribe Called Quest. And when I quest for the Buddy, I don't fess. For my Jimmy was nothing but the best.
The best?
The best.
Ooh-wee.
Let's stick out Jimmy and see what we can catch.
Stick him up, Jimmy.
Next, won't be needed unless
Jenny wanna get right to the flesh.
Yeah.
We get that girl over there.
I won't lie, I love B-U-D-D-Y. Cause I never let it walk on by. When it comes to meeting Jenny, I seem
very serious.
Like a pig friend, Buddy is the act that accrues on the list. When Jimmy and Jenny start shooting the gift, boy, let me get shot, I won't even rip.
Buddy, Buddy, don't you know you make me go nutty? I'm so glad that you're not a buddy buddy. Not too skinny and not too chubby. Soft like silly buddy, Miss Crabtree. I hope that you're not mad at me. Cause I told you that it was your buddy. That was making me ever so horny. Jungleistically horny.
On the dial, my buddy talks to me for a while. Plug two is the
cue to her tip.
On the A side or sometimes the flip.
Never gonna flip this record.
Buddy is the bud to my daisy tree. And the looter to my do-re-mi. And the pleaser to my man Plug 3.
Plug 3 gets all the buddy.
Behind my bush, my buddy likes the way that I push. And like a champ, just knock it on out. Never at once selling out.
Or let loose the juice.
My buddy helps me to
deal out my soul.
Keeping Jimmy in total control. Without Jimmy, I'd be on the road.
Girl, I heard you're looking for some good times. If we quest from the soul, guess what we'll find? A whole lot of fun. Lots of fun together, just like kissing cousins.
Yeah, that's kinda clever.
Close like bosoms, bosoms stay close. If you be my buddy, I will boast that we're like Elva Merce and Lucille McGillicuddy. You can be mine, and I can be your buddy.
The best buddies in evening wear. Long loving that's true, no,
he's in there.
I feel sorry for those who pay a fare.
A fee? Word to the D.
I don't beg, I just tease my buddy with my right leg. And then when it's ready, what's said
is buddy is best in bed.
Word.
Fly buddy told us all to get into a circle. Said don't worry because I won't hurt you. All I really wanna do is freak you.
She freaked
and
us.
I watched, and then I checked my swatch to see the time. The soul had formed the buddy line, and that buddy was
mine, oh mine.
Now when the Tribe, the Jungle, and De La Soul is at the club, our ritual unfolds. Grab our bones and start swinging our hands, and Jenny start flocking in every brand. Cause Jennifer just wanna stay aware. Yo, fellas, should we keep her aware?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yo, 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 Africa, how do you like your buddy?
Straight up with polka dots. Grab your bones. Swing the hands.
Swing your hands.
Do the Sammy B, y'all.
Swing your hands.
Yeah. Buddy.
Ali.